Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a Maryland tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy. I really appreciated that you, like, gestured to yourself.
Yeah, I just gave myself, like, a big Peter Pan thumb there. This guy, he's Justin McElroy. It's Max Fun Drive week.
That's why we're feeling so silly.
We're feeling so giddy, because people are helping us to fund our podcast network. If you don't know, I'm going to give you the 30-second version.
The 30-second version comes early. We'll give you more details later.
You're wasting my time. Now I'm at 23 seconds.
Ready, set, go.
Okay, the 30-second version is this. We are on a podcast network called Maximum Fun. And there's a lot.
That's what you're going to have.
Okay, 27 seconds. You're just killing me right here.
You actually went up.
We're on a network with a lot of podcasts. And once a year, we come to you hat in hand and say, hey, if you want to help us fund these shows, it would really mean the world to us. And this is the time for you to do that. So what we're asking is, that was 30 seconds. You head over to MaximumFun.org/donate or MaximumFun.org and click the donate button. Either one works. And then you pledge an amount that you can give us to help fund all the great shows on the network. $5 a month is the minimum. And if you could do that, it would be amazing. But more would be amazing too. We've got a lot of great gifts to thank you, but we want to go ahead and get that out of the way right now, up front.
And this goes for you lovely people who are already donating to our network as well. If you want to upgrade, if you've been thinking about it, if you're in a position to do so, this is a great time to do it.
A lot of great,
those gifts are for you too.
A lot of great prizes. And because this is Max Fun Drive week, we wanted to do a topic that a lot of people have asked us to do, and we haven't gotten around to yet. Then we're doing it now.
Now, let's go. That's right. We want to talk about James Berry, Dr. James Berry. Now, I briefly mentioned Dr. James Berry before. Do you remember the episode, Justin? Go.
Well, Sid, it was the one where...
Right, I knew you
Justin, edit in. Hold on. Make a click noise. That's me reminding myself right there to edit in me giving a great answer to that question.
That's right, Justin. C-sections. I'm so glad you remembered that was the episode that we talked about, James. But very briefly. And that's a crime, because there's a lot more to say. There's a lot more to this story. And a lot of our listeners have been asking to hear that. Thank you, Andrew and Oliver and Megan and Sarah and Aaron and JC for recommending this topic, as well as whatever Facebook video has been showing up endlessly on my feed recently. Mm-hmm. About James Berry. I don't know, just to remind Sydney, you've been meaning to do this. It's in everybody's mind now. You should do it. So Margaret Ann Bulkley.
Okay.
Was born in Cork. That's in Ireland.
We went there for our honeymoon, Sid. You remember?
We did go there for our honeymoon. It was amazing.
It's lovely.
It was a lovely, lovely time.
Lovely country over there.
Lovely place. So Margaret was born in Cork around 1789. Although it was around 1789, probably in that time. This was the time when your birth year was just like about that.
We didn't even know what day of the week it was most of the time.
The birth is about 1789. Margaret's parents were Mary Ann and Jeremiah. And Mary Ann, Margaret's mom, was the sister of James Berry, who was an Irish artist and a professor at London's Royal Academy of some renown. So a famous artist was her uncle. Jeremiah was a merchant. But his career and his position suffered in part due to anti-Catholic discrimination, mm-hmm. and then in part just I think he was maybe a bit of a shady character is what I've gleaned from a lot of the things that I've read.
Okay, so kind of a rabble rouser?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what all he did, but one way or another, he ended up in jail. Mm-hmm. And then kind of vanishes from the story.
I know that you're hypersensitive to it as a Catholic, but you know if someone does crimes and shady things and then goes to jail, that's not really what anti-Catholic discrimination means, right?
I think that in part,
there we go.
He had difficulties Fair due enough. To anti-Catholic discrimination.
Okay, fine. But also,
I think as a Protestant, Justin, you should stay out of this conversation.
All right, fair enough.
Either way, he ended up out of the picture, in jail, and then kind of leaving the family behind, which left Marianne, his wife, and their two children, John and Margaret, to more or less fend for themselves. They really didn't have means to support themselves. John actually, like, is older, ends up, like, having a family and a job on his own, but he really isn't in a position to support Margaret and his mom. Yeah. And on top of this, there's a third child, Juliana, who was born at some point in this.
That seems a touch irresponsible, given what you've told me so far. But...
Well, Justin, I would withhold all judgments on that issue.
Okay.
Until we get into the story a little bit more.
Deal.
Because there is definitely more to Juliana.
Okay.
So from this dilemma came a scheme, as often does. Margaret was initially in school to be a governess. She was clever. She was bright. She was working hard. Her mother, Marianne, had her in school. But being a governess did not necessarily come with a lot of money. And it was also felt that Margaret was displaying talents and intellect that would leave her capable of many other careers. In particular, careers that maybe weren't open to Margaret because she was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point in history, this was kind of the best thing to do with her clever mind, whereas maybe there were other options if her brother had wanted to do them. So some of her uncle, James Barry's liberal friends, because at this point, actually, during this period of her life, her uncle actually passes away.
Okay.
But they're still very close, these friends that of his that were kind of this, like, I always imagine that, like, they're this cool group of, like, they hang out in cafes and they smoke cigarettes, which is bad, and you shouldn't smoke because smoking hurts you, but like in a cool way.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're hurting themselves in a cool
way. Everybody's very cool. Like, I keep picturing, like, I don't know.
Like the Breakfast Club?
No, not like the Breakfast Club. Like everybody from Moulin Rouge.
Le Breakfast Club.
I pictured they were very cool and they were very liberal, and they think, you know what? We should get this clever Margaret into medical school.
Okay.
Because I don't know that Margaret really desired to be a doctor as much as Margaret actually wrote there. We have letters that say, if I wasn't a girl, I would be a soldier. So there was definitely this desire to be a soldier. I don't know if a doctor in the army was her goal, but one way or another, they hatched a plan to try to get into medical school by pretending she was a man.
Okay.
So the plan was that she would go to medical school in Edinburgh. And then after she had attained her medical degree, initially they thought that she would go to Venezuela with General Francisco de Miranda, who was a friend of her uncle's and part of this group, after her training. And women were actually allowed to practice medicine in Venezuela at the time. So that was the original thought process. That's where
pretend
all this
to be a
happened.
Man long enough to get her training and then...
And then go to Venezuela, live as Margaret, the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That was the original plan. However, this plan would eventually fail because General Miranda was in jail by the time she finished her studies and died soon thereafter.
Oh,
so that kind of
that's rough.
Ended that part of the plan. So she was tutored and prepped. And on November 30th, 1809, Margaret and her mother went to set sail for Edinburgh. However, the two who boarded the ship were Marianne, the mother, her mother, and James Barry. This is the point in the story where Margaret assumes the dress and the name and the presentation of James Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that this is a good moment to take kind of a side note.
Right. We've talked about this a little bit because we want to figure out how to sort of handle it.
This part of what still remains kind of a mystery to this day about Dr. James Barry is, did Margaret Bulkley Was Margaret Bulkley a transgender man who presented as James Barry because that was the gender with which Dr. Barry identified as a man? Or was Margaret Bulkley, would she identify as a woman who presented as James Barry simply because of the opportunities that that afforded Margaret at that point in history, because mm-hmm. because a woman would not have been allowed to go to medical school. So was this an elaborate scheme, or mm-hmm. was this Margaret presenting herself as the gender that he truly identified as? I don't know. I don't know the answer. And there are many biographies about James Barry, and you can read and research and theorize. We have letters that we can peruse of Dr. Barry's to try to find an answer to this, and accounts from the time period from various people who were in the doctor's life. But nobody really knows for sure. And Dr. Barry isn't here for me to ask the question, which is what I would do if I weren't sure of this answer. I would ask the question.
If you're someone who would love to count James Barry as sort of a pioneer in the as someone who was like a very early transgender person involved in medicine, I can completely understand the impulse.
Would have been the first, if that is the case. Would have been
the first. And that may very well be the case, but it may very well not be the case. And we don't want to be in the position of misidentifying anybody.
Okay. And that's the case. That's the fact. Either way you cut it, James Barry was a revolutionary. Because whether this is in fact the story of the first transgender man to complete medical training and practice medicine, Dr. Barry was the first. Or the story of the first woman to complete medical training in, you know, the UK and practice medicine, then Dr. Barry was the first. Mm-hmm. So either way, Dr. Barry is a revolutionary and amazing character, certainly worthy of many books and much discussion and much, much higher minded discussion than I would dare to say I am capable of on Sawbones.
Right.
And more than worthy of a Sawbones episode is what I'm saying.
And because this is such a sensitive issue, there's a temptation to say, well, we just won't fool with that one because we don't want to do wrong by anybody. But Sidney Felton, and I think that it's an important story, and it's one that we shouldn't ignore just because it's complex. So that is so here's how we're going to handle the question of identifying James Barry's gender.
At this point in the story, Dr. James Barry presented as a man, and by all accounts was taken as a man by everyone who met him and interacted with him, and never at least openly contradicted that statement. Okay. So the best that I can, from what I have read and what I understand and what I think is the right thing to do, I am referring to Dr. James Barry at this point as a man, because that is the way that the doctor presented. For the remainder of his life, by the way.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, do you want to know what happens next?
Yes.
Arriving at the university, Dr. Barry, well, James, is not Dr. Barry yet. He's got to finish. Got to actually go to the university first. He was accepted into the medical class, and he began taking courses in 1809. Now, obviously, James looked smaller and had a higher voice than a lot of his other classmates, and no hair on his chin. And so this actually led not to questions of gender, but to questions of age. Which James actually, he would tell people, well, that's where some of the confusion about what year was James Barry born comes from, is that he lied about his age to account for the fact that he looked, you would have expected.
So how old would he have been? Let me run the math. 18, he would have been 20, right?
Yeah, but he looked like, many people assumed he was a prepubescent boy.
Why would he have to lie about his age though, if he was 20?
So he told people that he was like 15 or 16.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. All right, he lied about, okay.
Yeah, so because because they would have expected if he were a 20-year-old man that he would be taller and his voice would be deeper. Okay. It sounded like his voice hadn't changed. It sounded like, he didn't have any hair on his chin.
He just like decided to pretend he was Doogie Howser.
Exactly. He just pretended he was younger. But he did. But that actually caused problems because they thought he was lying and that he was even younger than that. They thought maybe he was 12.
Okay.
And they didn't want to let a 12-year-old finish medical school. So there was a lot of arguing, and it took more influential friends to help get him to actually sit for his finals, which, of course, he passed.
There's an easy test. Just ask him who PewDiePie is. If he's able to answer instantly, then he's 12 or under.
But he did. He did pass his tests, and he earned an MD in 1812. He continued his training in London at St. Thomas's Hospital. He passed the exam for the Royal College of Surgeons in 1813, and he joined the British Army as a hospital assistant soon thereafter. From there, because he has joined the military at this point, his course kind of follows wherever he was assigned next. So first he was assigned to Chelsea and then Plymouth, and then soon thereafter to Cape Town, South Africa. And that's where we start to get some of the kind of unique and exciting things that Dr. Barry did in his career. So first of all, he had a pretty important job. He was medical inspector for the colony, and he was also in Cape Town, and he was also assigned to work personally for the governor, Lord Charles Henry Somerset. He even was credited with saving Lord Somerset's daughter's life.
Wow.
Yeah. So he spent 10 years working there. And while he was there, he did some things that at this point in history would have been pretty revolutionary for a doctor to do, such as improve sanitation. He believed in things like clean water being an important factor in general health and well-being. He was not afraid to challenge incorrect medical views held among the community, especially things like patent medicines, people who were selling fake tonics that had, you know, opium or whatever, alcohol in them, things that were dangerous that we know were everywhere and rampant at this point in history.
Right.
He was not afraid to speak out against them, which was very strange at this time in history. He advised things like a healthy diet and exercise. Which, again, I know
this... Wow, it's crazy that was, like, progressive.
This was progressive. I mean, he himself believed in a healthy diet. He actually was a vegetarian his whole life. He was known to be very loud and outspoken about all these views. And this is one of the things you see repeated in accounts of Dr. Barry, is that he was not afraid to challenge people and to get in very heated arguments and to speak up when he thought people were doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. He was known to be kind of loudmouth and kind of brash.
I love that. I love the cockiness of, like, somebody who is hiding something but also is not going to shut their mouth about anything.
No, if they're going to say it.
Yeah, right. It's not going to play it close to the vest.
So now this is the reason that we've spoken about him on the show before. He performed the first successful C-section in Africa by a British physician on a kitchen table. That's where he performed this procedure, on a kitchen table. And successful, meaning both mom and the son survived.
Wow.
And a little cool side note, the child that he delivered was named after him, by the way.
Wow.
And later became Prime Minister of South Africa from 1924 to 1939.
Okay. Wow, really?
BT-dub. Yeah.
Machi-machi.
Yeah. He was... Now, one thing that did plague his time in Cape Town is that he was rumored to have had a very close relationship with Lord Somerset. And this is where we start to leave the realm of stated historical fact into supposition and trying to draw conclusions based on, mm-hmm. you know, letters and hearsay and that kind of thing.
Right.
The pair were very close. He was Lord Somerset's personal physician, as I mentioned. Even had, I think he stayed there frequently as well. And the two were actually accused of having a sexual relationship. There was like a note posted somewhere on a bridge by someone, like, anonymously, like, I saw these two having sex, and which at the time would have been.
Sydney, we cannot start entering bridge graffiti into evidence for sawbones, okay? I know we're not professional researchers, but come on. Someone wrote on a bridge that this was the case, so perhaps.
Well, it led to charges of libel. I mean, it was a big deal because at the time, the two being accused of having a sexual relationship would have been a big deal.
Okay.
You know, a lord and
I forgot an officer in the British Army. When everybody just didn't say whatever came to them. fine in any given moment.
They were acquitted of this. People didn't buy it. They didn't think that they were actually having a sexual relationship. I have no idea if they did or not. They were very close.
We're in an era of medicine where specialization is big. Do you pine for living in this era where doctors kind of like were much more general purpose adventurers, apparently?
You know, I think I did when I was like probably a medical student when I was younger. I thought that the idea of I would call those kinds of physicians like cow people, cowboys, cowgirls, cowwomen, whatever you want to call them. Nowadays, people who are able to go work in like rural settings and do a lot more. Whereas now, you know, I work in a big academic center where there are a lot of specialists. I don't know. I'm a little more sheltered, and the idea of taking on all that stuff would make me anxious, I think. When I was younger, I would have answered you, absolutely, I wish I could do that. But now I'm kind of glad that I have people who really know what they're doing all the time.
All right. I didn't mean to derail you.
Sorry. So in addition, he got into an argument while he was in Cape Town that ended in a duel.
Wow.
With a fellow soldier.
This is an exciting life.
It was a very exciting. He got in the duel. The other soldier shot him in the thigh. But he hit the other guy in the head, except for it was kind of in like the top, like in his cap. So it didn't actually strike his head. It hit him in the cap. And so
William Tell action.
Yeah. So both of them were fine. I mean, well, he got shot in the thigh.
Not fine. That's a pretty loose interpretation of fine.
Well, he cared for it himself. He took care of it by himself.
James.
Now that I'm all about.
Yeah,
I think that's awesome.
That you're into.
So he took care of it by himself, and the other guy survived, and that was kind of the end of that. In general, as I've kind of mentioned, he was often remembered as macho, brash, arrogant, tactless, despite the fact that people would always say, but he is a really good doctor. And his patients tended to like him for the most part. There was the odd account of him yelling at patients, but for the most part, he was known to have a good bedside manner and to be excellent at his craft. Also, he was kind of eccentric. He slept every night with a black poodle that he owned named Psyche.
Okay, sure.
And everywhere he traveled, I told you he was a healthy guy, he took a goat with him for milk, because he thought goat milk was the healthiest. So he had his own goat that he took everywhere so he could drink goat milk. Also, as a side note, he did have a manservant, a personal servant that spent 50 years of his life with him. And I do not know if this man was ever aware of the history of James Barry, of his history. Hmm. I don't know. I just think it's interesting. They spent 50 years together.
I got to know more. What happened next?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Justin.
This is normally where we go to the billing department, but not this time.
No,
Sid.
This isn't billing department.
No, this is Max Fun Drive every year. The fun department.
That wasn't good.
Let's party.
Party department.
Party department. It sounds like where you get like cheap Wonder Woman costumes and Kolsch at value prices.
A lot of streamers.
Welcome to the party department. My name is Philip. Let me show you two.
They're actually not allowed to call streamers. It a Wonder Woman costume.
This is Action Lady. We were latex Action Lady costumes.
Now, Maximum Fun Drive. Okay. So we're on this network, Maximum Fun. We've got a ton of great shows like this one, which you already enjoy, but there's a lot of others. Stop Podcasting Yourself, Jordan Jesse Go, Judge John Hodgman, Still Buffering, Tights and Fights, Lady to Lady.
My brother, me.
There's a ton of that the shows are funded. The people who make those shows are paid, and their equipment purchased, and bandwidth, and marketing, and everything, all that stuff is paid by listeners like you. And the way that works is every year we come to you, the listeners, and say, "Hey, can you pledge a certain amount of money to the network to help it grow?" That could range from $5 all the way up to $200 a month. Whatever you can do, it absolutely means the world to us. Even if it's just $5 a month, that really still does help a lot. And we have gifts at each level. So for $5 a month, you're going to get exclusive bonus content. And that is a lot of exclusive bonus content.
Yeah, there's all the bonus content from every show on the network for as long as we've been making bonus content.
There's like something like 5 new episodes of Sawbones on there you've never heard. Mm-hmm. There's bunch of episodes of My Brother and Me. There's bonus episodes of Still Buffering. There's a ton of really cool stuff. At $10, you get all that exclusive bonus content plus a pin. For each show, there's a special pin that you can order that you get as a gift at just $10 a month. And then if you can do $20 a month, which is just a huge help, you get the Keep in Touch kit, where there's rocket-shaped note cards and a rocket pin and a rocket stamp and rocket candle, all kind of Max Fun themed. And plus, you get the pin and you get all the bonus content. And the cool thing about Max Fun, one of the cool things about the Max Fun Drive is when you pledge or when you upgrade your pledge, make sure you don't miss this because you want to do it. You say what shows you listen to. And your money is split between the shows that you say that you listen to. You're directly supporting those shows. So when you upgrade, there's a little checkbox that says, I want to update my listening habits. And you can say if you start listening to new shows, and you can update that. And your money goes straight to those shows. There's a portion for Max Fun, and the rest goes directly to those shows. So you really are helping to make cool stuff in the world.
Absolutely. And there are gifts, Justin, you mentioned, I think up to the $20, also at $35 a month. If you can pledge that, you can get the Max Fun beer mugs.
Cool.
Which are rocket and gray, which are super cool. And there are also levels at $100 and $200 a month.
Yeah.
If you can do it.
Now, if you're interested, if you can help us out, don't wait. Don't hesitate. Don't play or hate. I just want another rhyme. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. And there's my rhyme is right there.
Donate. Yeah. Or donate. Go to Maximum Fun and click on donate.
Yes. Either one.
That would also rhyme. Either way, donate rhymes.
Donate still rhymes no matter where you put it. And it's true, sweetie. So please go do this. We need you. And we need you to like, now more than ever, if our show means something to you, if the other shows in the network mean something to you, please help to keep them going. And it's easy to do, and it means the world. And
yeah, we really appreciate it. If you're already a member, thank you so much for being one. Like I said, if you're interested in upgrading, this is a great time to do it. And it's super easy if you are joining for the first time. Once you go to MaximumFun.org, click on donate, you give them your credit card information, like Justin said, the shows you listen to, and then your donation processes automatically each month. So unless you cancel it, there's nothing else
you need to worry
about. You gotta do. So that's super easy. So do it now while it's on your mind, while you're thinking about it.
MaximumFun.org/donate. Okay. Sidster. I want to hear more. I'm desperate for more James Berry information.
Like I said, Dr. Berry moved around a lot because of his career in the military. And all the while, he was improving conditions largely troops. I mean, he was in the military.
Sure.
Everywhere he went, especially sanitary conditions and health-related matters. And also getting into trouble. In St. Helena in 1836, he was arrested and court-martialed on charges of conduct unbecoming of the character of an officer and a gentleman.
Mm.
But he was found not guilty.
Ah.
So no big deal. In 1840, he worked to improve conditions for British troops in the West Indies while almost dying of yellow fever.
Unbelievable.
But yellow fever could not stop James Berry because in 1846, he was in Malta fighting cholera. And also getting into kind of a big tiff with local clergy because he sat in one of the clergyman's seats in church and didn't move. It was really something like that.
That's amazing.
He was new. He sat in the wrong seat and then wouldn't move.
That's amazing. Go. I mean, I keep waiting to make a joke, but I can't because James Berry just rules. And he just does a bunch of cool stuff. He didn't really mess up medicine at all. It's kind of out of character for us.
I thought about that. The fact that typically on our show, we talk about all the times we got it wrong. And I felt like this was, especially we kind of try to do something a little unique during Max Fun Drive. This was an opportunity to celebrate kind of a biographical episode about a unique character in medicine with a kind of a cool, house-like personality. I like to think about him like that, like a little bit of house-like personality, but really clever and obviously.
By the way, if House had James Berry's backstory, that show would have been infinitely more interesting. All that stuff, and also, there's this one other thing.
Yeah. Now, here's a weird interaction. He met Florence Nightingale in Crimea in the 1850s, and the two got in an argument.
Oh, man. Fighting with Florence Nightingale, that's rough.
There's actually, I think there's a play out there somewhere that somebody wrote imagining this.
Really?
Like, just this interaction, like the day that they were, like, crossing the square. Well, actually, I have a quote from directly from Florence Nightingale, the Lady of the Lamp herself, about the interaction. And what she said was, "I never had such a blackguard rating in all my life. I, who have had more than any woman, than from this Barry sitting on his horse while I was crossing the hospital square with only my cap on in the sun, he kept me standing in the midst of quite a crowd of soldiers, commissariat, servants, camp followers, etc., etc., every one of whom behaved like a gentleman during the scolding I received, while he behaved like a brute. And after he was dead, I was told that Barry was a woman. I should say that Barry was the most hardened creature I ever met." So Flo was not a fan.
I think I hear a twinkle in there. I detect a twinkle of maybe not respect, fondness.
It really had to do with, as far as I could tell, because I kept trying to find more details about this argument, and it really had to do with her not wearing enough like protection out in the sun.
That was,
she's only wearing her cap out in the sun.
Florence Nightingale, it's your problem.
I don't know. Maybe he was just worried about like sun exposure.
Yeah, it's
would have been way ahead of his time.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
But on the bright side, while he was there, Barry also had the highest recovery rate of wounded soldiers in the whole war.
Unstoppable.
Due to
unstoppable,
probably in part to a lot of these like sanitation measures that he implemented and the way that he devised of helping wounds heal and caring for wounds as they were healing. In 1857, he ended up in Canada as Inspector General of, I mean, basically all the hospitals.
Wow.
It's like a big, important position. And he worked to improve situations among all the troops and their families as well. And he also did a lot for people who weren't necessarily in the military, among like the local prison population. Mm-hmm. He worked to help improve their, again, their conditions, food and you know, clean water and things like that, and cleanliness in general. And also with a lot of people who had leprosy. And, you know, this was a time where you would have had like leper colonies, like areas where they were designated for people who had leprosy to live. And he did a lot to improve their conditions as well. So worked really hard, had a lot of power and did a lot of good with it. And I think he would have kept going, but he had some health issues. I think a couple bouts of bronchitis and just in general was not in the best of health. And so in 1864, he just couldn't keep going. He was forced to retire. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
He would have been 75. At that point, does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. Yeah. So he was forced to retire just due to health conditions. And unfortunately, a year later, he died of dysentery in 1865. This now, like I said, up to the day he died, there was never any question. I mean, well, after he died, some people said they had questions. But up until this point, we don't have documented evidence that people knew anything other than the what Dr. James Barry told everyone. But Dr. Barry specifically requested that he be buried in the clothes in which he died and that there not be any sort of like autopsy or anything after he died.
Mm-hmm.
Probably to continue to conceal this part of his history. However, Sophia Bishop, who was a maid, a charwoman, a woman who just felt like that was wrong. You know, he was sick. He was probably not in the best, his body wasn't in the best condition. And they just felt like out of respect for this renowned officer and doctor, you shouldn't let him be buried in these clothes in which he died. And so she did what was the standard at the time and prepared his body for burial, removing his clothing in order to dress him probably in his uniform to be buried. However, when she laid out his body for burial, she discovered, in addition to the fact that, by the way, his hair was dyed red. I noticed that little side note here. He used to dye his hair red.
That's odd.
I really like that side note. Why not? That he was a 75-year-old man who was dyeing his hair. that he had a vagina and breasts, as well as what the charwoman was certain were stretch marks on Dr. Barry's abdomen that would have been indicative of a history of childbirth.
What?
Do you remember the sister, Juliana, that appeared suddenly in the middle of all of the financial troubles.
Are you sure?
Historically, it is believed. This is not just conjecture. It is pretty, I mean, it is almost certainly thought that Juliana was actually the daughter of Dr. Barry. Yeah, but from when Margaret Bulkley would have been very young. So, and they asked, she went to the doctor who had been taking care of Dr. Barry right before he died, his friend and doctor who had taken care of him many times when he had been ill, who never, according to him, suspected anything else. And she kind of attempted to blackmail him and said, look what I just found. Look what I just figured out. She was also the one who brought the stretch marks to the attention and said, and he actually challenged her on that and said, how in the world could you know from that this person ever gave birth? And she basically said, I've had 9 kids. I think I know. It was kind of her argument. But she tried to blackmail him, and the doctor basically said, listen, his family has long since passed away. Nobody's going to believe you. You go say whatever you need to say, but nobody's going to listen to you. I don't care.
She sounds like a creep to me. That's where I'm at. That's what I think about Sophia Bishop. I think she was a grade A creep.
The doctor was pretty cool about it because after this, of course, some word began to spread. And one of the military officials, one of the officers in the military, actually wrote this doctor a letter and said, hey, I heard a rumor. Mm-hmm. And could this possibly be true? And he wrote back and he was honest. The doctor wrote back and said, this is exactly what was said to me. This woman, Sophia Bishop, the charwoman, came to me. She said this. I observed these things. And he kind of at this point throws on this caveat that, like, because that, what the charwoman said to him was, oh, well, you're a pretty doctor. So how many times did you examine this patient's chest and you've never noticed this, basically?
Okay, that one might be fair.
because it was documented that Dr. Barry had multiple bouts of bronchitis and pneumonia, things that you would have thought he would have.
Can I say, though, doctor-patient confidentiality, like, I know that wasn't a well-established idea at this time, but I could certainly see.
Actually, it was.
You weren't
on the episode where I explained to my dad that it was.
Oh, that's true. I'm an idiot about doctor-patient confidentiality.
That's an old idea.
But, like, that's completely plausible to me. Like, I could completely see, especially two doctors, like, listen, we could take a seat before we get started.
Or maybe not even mentioned, like, known but not even said. Just a quiet knowledge. And the doctor actually in the letter back to the military official says, I thought personally that Dr. Barry was likely intersex. So he was not, he doesn't say, he says basically like, I didn't know what kind of genitalia Dr. Barry had, but I assumed from other aspects of his, like his stature and other physical characteristics that he was probably intersex. But basically he says, but it doesn't matter because either way, my job was to identify this as the body of the inspector general of the hospitals, you know, basically of this super important, very impressive, talented and intelligent military officer. And that is exactly who this person is. So it kind of puts it to rest and says, it doesn't matter, which I think is kind of cool for the time, saying like, let's just remember how amazing this person was and not get lost in, you know, what we perceive as this whatever, you know. Anyway, there were people who spoke up at that point because, again, word spread, rumors do. People who spoke up and said they knew it all along.
Oh, sure you did.
They always suspected it. They always thought something. Right.
Yeah.
But whether or not anyone did, there were people who said, I would have said something, but I don't know if you knew Dr. Barry, but he had quite a temper. And there was once a fellow officer who suggested that Dr. Barry may have looked like a woman, and James struck him with a horse whip.
All right.
So
okay.
That would discourage a lot of people from questioning that. And then others said, there's no way. He was very flirtatious. He was known as a ladies man. That he liked women a lot, and he was always flirting with them and talking with them, and women loved him. And either way, everybody did agree he was a very good dancer. I don't know what that's evidence for. Either way, They did discover, again, as they were kind of at this point trying to look for other clues, they did discover that there was inside the lid of his trunk, there was a collage that he created of women's fashions. So I don't know. Some historians have looked at that as like a sign that maybe Dr. Barry wished that he could present as a woman still, but couldn't. I don't know.
Or
maybe just wished he could wear a dress. That doesn't even necessarily mean it. Maybe just like the dresses. Who knows? But like that's been noted as like, what does this mean? Who knows? What is it? I mean, you know, you look for clues after somebody's gone. We all do things. And I would hate for anybody to read too much into some of the
yeah, I got some things
I do
in my closet.
Into like maybe my internet search history or anything.
This guy has a Totino sweatsuit and a wizard's hat. Like, I don't know what to make of this cat.
Why does she have an amethyst wig in her in her closet? In addition, just some other notes that were like brought to light afterwards. He always did wear stacked heels with 3-inch insoles to try to make him look taller.
Okay.
And one thing that was discovered later is that the reason I mentioned that he had a manservant is that part of his manservant's job was every morning to lay out 6 thin towels along with his clothes that Dr. Barry had learned to strategically place in certain places around his body to make his shoulders look broader, to give him, you know, more of a like a masculine shoulder, and to cover his breasts and to reduce the curvature at his hips and to give him more of a masculine shape.
Man,
every day.
And he
every
lived
day.
In some areas of the world where that would be much less than pleasant.
Exactly. Every day he did this. Every single day. The British Army decided, look, we don't know quite what to do with this. And this is before a time where anybody was ready to deal with any of this information. So they basically just sealed up all of his records for 100 years.
Perfect.
And said nobody can know anything about this for the next 100 years. we're not going to talk about it.
We'll all be dead. Agreed. Okay, great. Done.
I love that British stiff upper lip. Like, let's not talk. Steal the records. Let's not talk about
years.
It.
Why not?
And it was like 140. Actually, it was like 2008 when a lot of the letters that actually solved this mystery, because this rumor went around for a long. I mean, you got to understand, for years and years, this story I just told you was as much folklore as it was true. Nobody knew if that was true. Well, we now know that everything I've just told you is true. For sure, the facts are true. Mm-hmm. Margaret Bulkley was James Barry. James Barry was Margaret Bulkley. We know that these two people were the same. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know this until around 2008 when we found some letters from James Barry and others. There is a town named after him in South Africa, Barrydale. I like that, Barrydale.
Yeah.
And he's been, like I said, the subject of books and plays and biographies and debate. And even Dickens wrote about Barry, so fascinated by this figure in medicine. And that's the thing, like Justin mentioned, I hesitated at first because I thought, I don't know if Dr. Barry were here and I were to ask, please help me, you know, understand your story. You know, were you a transgender man and this is the story of your life? Or were you a woman who presented as a man simply so that you could pursue this career that you, because he would, because she wrote as a little girl, if I were not a girl, I would be a soldier. So was that your story? I don't know. I don't think it matters though. And the reason I think this is worthy of a Sawbones episode is that obviously it does matter, but it doesn't matter in the sense of, should we address this person and talk about their history and celebrate them as an amazing, clever, cool, funny, somewhat hot-tempered figure in medical history. Just because, you know, we're not sure of all the facts doesn't mean we shouldn't celebrate their life. So I didn't want to discourage that. Because Dr. Barry still saved the life of, what, a future prime minister of South Africa. So,
amazing.
Yeah.
You, too, can be an awesome person. Maybe not automatically as awesome as James Barry, but pretty good if you donate to the Maximum Fun Drive. MaximumFun.org/donate is the place to do that. Wanted to alert you to a couple of other things that are going on. The 28th is Max Fun Day. There's going to be a bunch of community gatherings going on all around. If you go to MaximumFun.org/meetups2017, 7 p.m. local time, Tuesday, March 28th. They're going to have meetups. I'm looking at the list now, and it's pretty much all over. There is a roughly a kajillion of them.
You can go and you can celebrate Max Fun, have a meetup, and also celebrate my birthday a day late.
Yeah, perfect.
So why don't you do that too?
Do both of those. And also the main thing is the donation and helping to keep this network going. We've expanded shows in 2017 again, and added shows. Still Buffering was last year, but still was added recently.
Yeah, the reason we're able to keep making more shows, new shows, and hopefully better quality of our old shows is because of your donations. So then you listening and supporting, and even if you're not in a position to donate right now, we still love you. First of all, we still are thrilled that you listen to our show. Tweet about the drive, share it with your friends, you know, get it out there. That really helps us out too, just to get the word out that we love doing this for you, and every dollar you can give helps us to keep doing it and hopefully do it better.
We mentioned the $5 level. There's the $10 gets you the pins. The $5 is all the great content. A lot this year. Ours is we just get way down into Goop.
Yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow's lifestyle website, Goop.
If you want to hear that? Then donate $5 a month and you can hear that. $10 a month you get a pin and the content. $35 a month there's that the great Keep in Touch kit. And the pin and the content, and it just goes on from there. Mm-hmm. $35, you get the cool mugs and the Keep in Touch kit and the pin and the bonus content. But mainly you get the feeling of being a member of this network.
Yeah, and every time you listen to our shows, you get to know you were part of this.
We love doing the show, but honestly, we have a kid, and one of the reasons that we are able to keep doing this as regularly as we do it is because it is part of how we feed said child. Yeah. and keep her clothed and what have you. So we really appreciate that.
You are keeping her in princess costumes and mac and cheese. So thank you.
So thank you. Anyway, maximumfund.org/donate. Please go there right now and give what you can. If you can't give, I get it. I don't know. You keep listening. We love you still, no matter what.
Yeah.
So that's gonna do it for us. This week, MaximumFun.org/donate. Go do it. There's a big Max Fun extravaganza. Also, March 31st, it's going to close up the drive. It kicks off at 7 p.m. PT, 10 p.m. ET, MaximumFun.org for more information about that.
Also, thank you to the taxpayers for our theme song medicines.
Thank you, Sydney.
I got crushed it this time.
All right, that's going to do it for us, folks. Until next week, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.